Good morning. Kovell Russell had a hard and lonely life. At 91, he'd outlived all of his family and most of his friends. He was stoop-shouldered, blind in one eye, and suffering from prostate cancer. Life seemed pretty bleak. And then in April of 2001, it looked like it might get a whole lot bleaker. He got into an argument with his landlord and stabbed the man with his pocket knife. The landlord was okay, but Russell was sentenced to the Butte County, California jail. And in that most unlikely of settings, Kovell Russell at last found a home. He had few visitors, but he didn't seem to need any. His much younger fellow inmates called him Pops. They gave him dibs on the TV, allowed him to go first in the food line, reserved a place for him in the Monopoly game marathons. One fellow inmate remembered, quote, "We became his grandkids. We were a motley crew, but we were family nevertheless." Even the guards treated him with respect and gave him special attention. They got him an extra mattress and some extra blankets to cushion his frail body, and made sure he took his medication. The county attended to all of his physical and medical needs. And so for 462 days, Kovell Russell enjoyed this makeshift family and unlikely home, probably the closest thing to a real home he'd had in many years. He enjoyed it so much, in fact, that he petitioned the court to keep him in jail indefinitely. His lawyer filed repeated continuances so that Kovell could stay, knowing that he had threatened to take his own life if he were sent out to fend for himself in the world with no family and few friends. But in August of 2002, his luck finally ran out. A Superior Court judge sentenced him to freedom, saying that jail was no place for a man of his age and ill health. None of his former friends on the outside would have anything to do with him. And fearing the loss of his independence, he refused even to consider entering a nursing home and ended up for 2 weeks in a Motel 6 near the jail. With great difficulty, he walked to a local diner for meals. And finally, witnesses say he took a taxi to the middle of the Table Mountain Ridge over the Feather River. He sat on the rail for a half hour or so and then disappeared. His body was found later that day on the rocks below. His fate, no surprise to anyone who knew him. You know, at its most basic, the tragedy of Kovell Russell is simple. At the age of 91, he had finally found a home, however unconventional. But then he lost it again. And of course, a home is more than just a roof over your head, a place to exist. He could have found that anywhere. But what he found and then lost again was a community of caring, a place where he felt valued, a place where he found dignity and purpose in his life. Now, maybe you can't relate to the story of Kovell Russell, but maybe you can. I wouldn't be a bit surprised to learn that some of the folks hearing my voice today can understand from personal experience what it means to be without a home. Of course, that might mean living out of a car or camping in the woods or sleeping under a bridge. You know, that's the first image that comes to mind when we think of homelessness. And that's not as uncommon as you might think, especially for those in the LGBTQ community. In her sermon last week, Reverend Karen gave us some statistics around this issue. LGBTQ youth are 120% more likely than their straight counterparts to be homeless, while an estimated 7% of all youth identify as LGBTQ, around 40% of youth experiencing homelessness do. Many of them are living on the streets in situations where they're in constant danger of assault, abuse, or exploitation, either because they've been kicked out of their homes or because they simply found the situation at home intolerable. But it's not just young people. In one study, 3% of sexual minority adults experienced homelessness within the most recent year, compared to 1% of cisgender straight adults. African American LGBTQ folks had twice the homelessness rate of their white counterparts. And for transgender folks, it was 8%. Altogether, around 17% of sexual minority adults experience homelessness at some point in their lives, more than twice that of the general population. And that's pretty alarming, isn't it? But I'm pretty sure it's even worse than those numbers would suggest, because all of those statistics are about people who are homelessness in the traditional sense, sleeping on the streets, or sleeping in a car, or camping out on someone's sofa. But many times, even those with a roof over their head don't really have a home in the sense of having a place where they feel a genuine connection to others. You know, studies show that America is in the midst of an epidemic of loneliness and social isolation. In a study conducted in October of last year, Harvard University found that, quote, alarming numbers of Americans are lonely. They found that 36% of Americans are experiencing serious loneliness, with certain groups, including young adults and mothers with small children, feeling especially isolated. Of course, the COVID-19 epidemic didn't help with all of the isolation and lockdowns. 61% of young people aged 18 to 25 reported feeling lonely frequently or almost all the time in the previous month. And here's a statistic I find almost unbelievably alarming. In August of 2020, the CDC found that 25%, one in four young adults, had contemplated suicide during the preceding month of June. Amazing. Loneliness, stress, and anxiety are damaging in many ways. Individuals with few social connections have disrupted sleep patterns, altered immune systems, more inflammation, higher levels of stress hormones. In one recent study, it was found that isolation increases the risk of heart disease by 29% and of stroke by 32%. Socially isolated individuals had a 30% higher risk of dying within the next 7 years, an effect that was largest in middle age. Loneliness can exacerbate cognitive decline in older adults, and isolated individuals are twice as likely to die prematurely as those with more robust social interactions. And these effects start early. Socially isolated children have significantly poorer health 20 years later. All told, loneliness is as important a risk factor for early death as obesity or smoking. But on the other hand, Hovau Russell's story tells us that even those who don't have a home in anything like a traditional sense can still find a sense of belonging if they can find and develop a community of caring. A home is not simply where we land. It's also where we choose to be and whom we choose to surround ourselves with. It's less about a building than about the people we choose to be with. Or so many LGBTQ folks know how important it is to gather a family of choice, whether we maintain a connection to our family of birth or not. Personally, I was very blessed to have loving and supportive parents and three older brothers whom I adore. But over the years, my brother and I, we all moved to separate states and we grew apart. And it's only in the last few years that we realized that we needed to reconnect with one another in a meaningful way as we all enter our senior years. And so we've tried to do that. But I consider myself extremely lucky as well to have an extended family of choice that includes many of you. And I can say without hesitation that this church has been a catalyst for the development of my family of choice. This too is my home in a very real sense. Many of my good friends are in my life because of this church. And I'll bet that's true of many of you as well. You know, we as a church have always tried to do our part to alleviate homelessness in our community. We have our seasonal food and clothing drives, the Brown Bag Project, where we feed families and children in the times when school is not in session. We have our shower truck out there to deal with basic hygiene needs. And there's our Unsheltered Neighbors Ministry providing food and clothing and basic personal care products and a caring presence to those experiencing homelessness in our community. And for a number of years, we also participated in Austin's cold weather shelter. One might, on nights when the temperature dropped below freezing, we'd shelter up to 30 homeless men for the night. And in the several years that Uprising Austin participated in that program, I never failed to be amazed by the experience, particularly by our volunteers. But you know, another group that always impressed me were the homeless men that we served. You know, I'm sure that some of them were LGBTQ folks, but we never asked. We just gave them a hot meal, a warm place to sleep, and the assurance that someone cared for them and cared about their safety and well-being. 30 or so homeless men would sleep, would eat the simple but ample meal that we gave them, and then sleep on the floor of our sanctuary. As you might expect, some of them were not particularly clean or well-groomed. Some obviously had mental illness, but I found them to be uniformly polite, respectful, grateful for the food and shelter. You know, one client told me that he liked coming here more than to some of the other churches because we didn't push religion on them. We didn't preach to them the gospel. We showed them the gospel through our actions. And I always tried to speak to some of the men and learn a little about their life story and their current circumstance. One homeless man that I'll never forget was a 57-year-old gentleman named Jim. As we sat on the floor and talked, he held onto my hand and told me a little bit about his story. I found out that he had been a Navy pilot earlier in life and then a commercial airline pilot for 18 years. He'd had a home and a family and a wife, well, several wives actually. But he'd fallen on hard time when arthritis made it impossible for him to keep flying. And it struck me that what Jim wanted more than anything else was for someone just to acknowledge his story, to respect his humanity and the fact that here was an individual of worth and dignity in spite of his current circumstances. Jim needed to know that he was valued, not for what he had done or what he'd accomplished, certainly not because he fit the model of what any 57-year-old man should be doing, but just because he's Jim, a beloved child of God. And I suspect that could have been said of every person in that building that evening, and for that matter, of every person in this room this morning. You know, it might be a stretch to say that we offered those men a home on those cold nights. They were here only for a short time, and then they moved on. But I'm convinced that my encounters with those homeless men taught them and taught me something about what a genuine home looks like. And that brings us to today's reading, Matthew's version of the Christmas story. You know, what we tend to think of as the nativity narrative is really a combination of bits and pieces put together from the Gospels of Matthew and Luke. The Gospels of John and Mark don't have anything to say about the birth of Jesus. And Matthew's version cuts right to the chase. There's no long trek to Bethlehem, no manger, no shepherds, no heavenly hosts singing hosannas. There is a star and wise men from the east bearing gifts, but they come later. In Matthew's version, it's pretty clear that Mary and Joseph live in Bethlehem. They're betrothed to be married, but don't yet live together as husband and wife. And that was not uncommon in first century Palestine. After a man and woman were betrothed, they were considered married, but might not cohabit for several months or even a year to allow the husband to gather resources and to build a home for his bride. And during that time, the woman remained a part of the household of her father. But if the couple had sexual relations, that was not regarded as any violation of Jewish cultural norms of the day. But then Mary finds herself to be pregnant, and that is a problem, because Joseph knows that he's not the father. He would have presumed that Mary had sex with another man, that she'd committed adultery. But he would have known also that to expose her publicly would have put her very life in danger. And so he plans to dismiss her privately rather than subject her to public humiliation and possible punishment. But then Joseph is visited by this angel in a dream, and the angel says, "Do not be afraid to take Mary as your wife, for the child conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. She will bear a son, and you are to name him Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins." And so it is. And there's certainly nothing in this account to suggest that Jesus was born into a homeless family. There's not even that part about being born in a stable that we find in the Gospel of Luke. According to Matthew, they did have to later flee their home and travel to Egypt to avoid the wrath of King Herod. But they never lost the most important aspect of home, the love and the comfort that they provided to one another. But then as Jesus matures, he takes a different path. One might almost say that he chose a self-imposed homelessness. He became an itinerant preacher and healer with no settled home, surrounding himself with his own chosen family and possibly alienating his family of birth. At one point, a scribe boasts that he will follow Jesus wherever he goes, and Jesus replies, "Foxes have dens and birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head." And elsewhere, he's told that his mother and brothers are outside waiting to speak to him, but his reply is, "Who is my mother and who are my brothers? For whoever does the will of my heavenly parent is my brother and sister and mother." You see, Jesus knows that having a home has much less to do with having a roof over your head than having a community of caring. And then he, in turn, does his best to provide comfort and dignity and worth to all of those with whom he came in contact. After all, he describes his mission this way: "I've come to preach good news to the poor, proclaim release to the captives, recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed." And I guess we might add, provide a home for the homeless. As followers of Jesus, don't we have a responsibility to go and do likewise? In this season, as we remember the birth of the baby Jesus, what are we doing to provide a home for those who need one? And there are many who need one, whether they have a roof over their head or not. Just think of all the individuals out there who just desperately need to hear that they matter to someone, despite their age or illness or disability or current circumstances or past history. People like Bovall Russell, remember him? How differently his story might have ended if Koval Russell could only have found a caring, welcoming Christian community willing to tell him, Koval, you do matter. You are valuable. You are someone. Or more to the point, if they had found him. Because it can't be up to the Koval Russells of the world to find the community they desperately need. That should be our job. Yes, it's wonderful that we provide a safe, welcoming, secure faith community here at Uprising Austin. But that's not enough if those out there who need it don't know that it's here. You know, we're often told that Uprising Austin is one of the best-kept secrets in Central Texas. And how can that be when we have 250-plus members? If each one of those 250, each one of you, told just one other person, who told just one other person, pretty soon there wouldn't be anyone in Central Texas who didn't know about this church without walls. And there wouldn't be any Koval Russells out there believing that there's no hope of finding a community for them. Koval Russell and that homeless man, Jim, needed what we all need, a sense of value, a sense of belonging, a caring community. And we've got one right here, so let's share it. You know, community's a funny thing. The more of it you share, the more of it you have. Well, I'm coming to the end of this sermon, and I'm sure you've been waiting for me to say something about Dorothy. So here goes. I'm sure you recognize the title of today's sermon, There's No Place Like Home, as that famous line from The Wizard of Oz. Dorothy's been trying her best to get back home to Kansas, and after many adventures, Glinda the Good Witch tells her that she had the power all along to do that. All she had to do was click those ruby slippers together 3 times and say, there's no place like home. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. And as certified friends of Dorothy, we all wish that were true, don't we? But we know that there are many folks out there for whom a more apt quote might be from Thomas Wolfe. You can't go home again, because home has ceased to exist except in the mothballs of memory. Now, Dorothy was able to go home, and Toto too, because that little farm in Kansas was a place where she was loved and valued. But not everybody has such a place. And that's where we come in, both individually and collectively. It didn't make it into the movie, but there's a great quote from L. Frank Baum's iconic book. Glinda tells Dorothy the following, quote, home is a place we must all find, child. It's not just a place where you eat or sleep. Home is knowing. Knowing your heart, knowing your mind, knowing your courage. If we know ourselves, we're always home anywhere, unquote. Isn't that part of what Jesus' ministry was telling us? So we, as a community of faith, as followers of Jesus, must do our part to help others find the home that we've found, a warm, welcoming, safe space to find a little comfort, a little company, a little rest on the journey. Let's do our best to make sure that those out there who need sanctuary know that there's one right here. It's not about telling anyone what to believe. It's about being willing to show people that you've found something worth believing in. It's not about banging on doors. It's about leaving a door open for someone who may need a refuge. It's not even about preaching the gospel. It's about living the gospel in such a way that your light will shine into the world. It's about providing community, dignity, and hope, and the assurance that each person matters to God and to us. Because that's what home truly means, isn't it? So let's make it so in this Advent season and always. Amen.